That was Bina Kamlani talking about Saul Bellow on the day that marks the centennial of his birth. Kamlani worked as Bellow's editor for many years. You can hear more from her interview, including what she sees as Bellow's legacy, later today on the noon hour of Here and Now on WILL AM 580. Or listen to the extended interview right now at willnews.org. It's Morning Edition on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows.
This is Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in with a look at the marketplace as it traded overnight and expectations for today at 11 a.m. Central Time. USDA will release the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Be sure to visit our website at that time at willag.org. The numbers will start streaming in there very quickly. You can follow me at Commodity Week on Twitter if you'd like to catch up with that news from the USDA at 11 o'clock, straight up Central Time when the report is released today. Let's take a look at what the weather forecast looks like now. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support for this agricultural weather report comes from Busey. Busey is an organization whose roots run deep, financing agricultural needs for over 145 years, helping serve the agribusiness needs of landowners and investors for generations to come. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Very warm to hot temperatures occurred across portions of the western Midwest as we went through the day yesterday. We'll see a repeat of that again today. Temperatures reached up close to 100 degrees as far north as eastern South Dakota. An actual 100-degree reading occurred in east-central portions of Nebraska. And as we go forward through the day today, we'll see a lot of this repeated one more time. We will then see ourselves in the midst of an increasing rainfall pattern that is going to bring down temperatures and is going to produce frequent precipitation across many areas. The forecast specifically will focus its energy on the western Corn Belt. That means from areas from Nebraska, northeast Kansas, and parts of southeastern South Dakota, into the Minnesota-Wisconsin area, as well as parts of Illinois and Michigan. These areas will see the highest frequency of rainfall from starting tomorrow and continuing through the first part of next week, and significant amounts of rainfall are going to occur, and we'll likely see that result in some saturated soil conditions and maybe a good chance for some flooding across parts of the region. The majority of the precipitation of greatest significance will be out in parts of Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa, maybe some neighboring areas in southern Minnesota and southeastern South Dakota, and those are the areas that will become saturated quickest and will likely see some flooding. Now, some of that region is still trying to get finished up with soybean planting, and field work is going to be put on hold while these frequent storms move across the region. There will be no prolonged period of dry weather over the period of time from Thursday into Monday or Tuesday. We'll start to see some improving trend in some areas during the middle part of next week, but there will still be some rain falling across parts of the region on into midweek. And we'll look for the Delta to see the least frequent precipitation, but they too will see a mix of rain and sunshine in the southeastern states as well. Hard red winter wheat country, as well as some of the soft wheat areas in the Midwest, will be under the gun, so to speak, for the potential for more wet weather diseases. There's already been some scab and rust reported out in parts of the central and southern plains. This round of wet weather will likely bring on more of that, and we will see a higher potential for some issues to develop across the lower Midwest as well. All of these crop regions are in the midst of their grain filling and maturing stages of development, and this much rain occurring over multiple days is certainly not going to help the quality of these crops. We do expect harvest delays in the southern plains, although Texas rainfall will not be nearly as heavy or as persistent as that which will occur in Kansas and Nebraska, and for that matter, parts of Missouri and Illinois. The temperature bias across the region, as I mentioned before, is going to heat back up again. This afternoon, we'll look for the high temperatures back over 90 degrees in many areas in the western Corn Belt, and maybe some areas in the lower eastern parts of the region as well. The warmest temperatures will be southeastern Nebraska, southwestern Iowa, into parts of central Illinois and central Indiana, and then southward. all the way through the southern plains. All of those areas will see temperatures over 90 degrees, with the hottest weather still in the central and southern plains, where readings will be in the middle and upper 90s too, coming close to 100. But with the increased cloud cover and precipitation prospects across parts of the plains, we'll see the temperatures cool down as we move forward into the day Thursday, and we'll still see those some lower 90s across the lower eastern Midwest, and for that matter maybe even parts of Missouri. After that, we'll start seeing some greater cooling take place. Some areas in the central U.S. plains may only see highs in the 60s and 70s for a brief period on Friday into Saturday, as the rainfall is heaviest at that point. We'll see similar conditions in the Great Lakes region for a brief period of time as well. The lower eastern Midwest will probably see high temperatures drop back into the 80s during the cooler days, but we're not going to see temperatures much cooler than that in the eastern portions of the region. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Support for this agricultural weather forecast on WILL comes from Busey. Since 1868, they've reinvested in our communities one project at a time, from financial guidance and support to energetic volunteers and committed leaders. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Let's take a look now at what some of the numbers are like across the Midwest. The national average basis for corn was unchanged at 19 cents under the July contract, and the DTN National Corn Index was unchanged as well at $3.46 a bushel for corn. The bean index shows 32 under the July contract, with 7 cents higher at $9.20. In Chicago at this hour, futures are trading a bit lower in the corn pit, down a penny and three quarters for the nearby July at 363 and a quarter. December at 380 and three quarters is 2 1/4 lower. July beans are down a quarter of a cent at 951 and a quarter. November at 925 and three quarters, up three quarters. Bean meal off $1.90. Bean oil 28 cents higher for the day. Soft red winter wheat is down 4 cents, and the hard red is 2 1/2 lower. Live cattle futures up 67 1/2 cents. Feeder cattle up $1. And lean hogs are 45 cents higher on their last tick. On this Wednesday morning, let's take a look at the marketplace and some analysis with Bill Gentry. He's at Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good morning to you, Bill.
Good morning, Todd. Glad to be with you again.
Well, it's good to be with you as well. USDA, of course, due to release its next WASDE, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. These come out once a month. Today's due at 11 Central, noon in the Eastern time zone. Any expectations for big change?
No, we really don't. I think realistically, you know, we've started to dial in some assumptions. You know, we've heard a lot about the weather and maybe some prevent plant issues. But in the grand scheme of things, it's probably too soon to really quantify those. And the USDA typically is not going to anticipate that very well. So I think realistically, no major changes expected today. And as most of us are thinking, as soon as those numbers are posted, we'll trade them for a few minutes, let the algos do their job, and then go back and look at the weather.
Anything out of the wheat numbers and crop production report?
I don't really expect so. I think it's going to be interesting to maybe look at the world numbers, because I think realistically our Australian situation with the impending El Nino situation may get a little bit of press, but in the grand scheme of things, it's probably too soon to tell.
All right. So those numbers will be, of course, on USDA's website, but they're already up at willag.org, not the new ones, but the old ones. Hopefully, I'm a little efficient today. David's on vacation, and I tried something new. We did this back in March. It seems to work. So,
yes.
So hopefully, I'll be able to put them in one place, and they'll show up in three or four all at the same time. You might have to refresh to get those numbers to show up, but they're in pretty easy, in a pretty easy format. And on the world ending stocks numbers, I also give you the change in billion bushels. Those are always in million metric tons, kind of throws me off. So hopefully people will get to those, and that'll help them out when they take a look at them. When you look at other marketplaces, Bill, I'm thinking in particular the feeder cattle or the things that livestock producers need to think about today.
Yeah, I think realistically the biggest thing we've seen is the cattle futures, not the futures, but the cattle futures are now within about $1 of the cash market. They've really recovered nicely and are finding a little bit better value. As far as catch-up hedging opportunities, these seem to be pretty decent value levels. We'd probably take a look at it. Don't want to be overly aggressive, but we just need to be value-based and make marketing decisions when we have the prices available to us.
And one other thing that has to do with livestock, this time on the consumer side, and I don't know how much you'll know or wonder, or information we have on this, but the press has started to pick up more the consumer side of the avian flu and its impact on egg production. There appear to be some shortages around the United States.
Yeah, I've heard that. There was a story over the weekend that some retailers were actually rationing the number of eggs that you could buy. In the grand scheme of things, I do think it's probably going to impact prices, but the overall availability does not seem to be a major issue at this point in time, but it's probably too soon to tell. I also talked to one of my guys in Ohio yesterday that's very closely connected with the poultry industry, and he said that the return of the migratory pattern this fall is really going to be a bother. They're upping their game as far as trying to protect what they've got, but they think that that next trek when the migratory birds pass to the south, it's going to be another wave of problems, so to speak.
Hey, thanks so much, Bill, for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Bill Gentry, of course, is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Opening Market Report. We're coming up on the top of the hour. It's 9 o'clock in the Central Time Zone. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580, WILL FM 90.9, HD3 Urbana. The forecast tells me that we're on our way today to a high of 93 degrees with a 20%, just a slight chance of thunderstorms, 40% this evening, going to 69. Back in about 50 minutes with more Ag News.
Good morning. The U.S. high school graduation rate is at a record high. At first glance, it looks good for school districts. We'll go behind the numbers in this hour of Morning Edition from NPR News. This hour, some school districts are simply giving students more chances to pass. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Ari Shapiro. Ahead, a judge upholds restrictions on abortion clinics in Texas. The case could go to the Supreme Court. The EPA is rethinking its approach to ethanol, which is supposed to be a source of green energy. Turns out producing ethanol from corn cancels out much of the benefit. In the NBA playoffs, it's Ohio against the world, and Ohio's chances are looking up. It's Wednesday, June 10th. The second first daughter, Sasha Obama, is 14 years old. And the news is next.